This is a very interesting, let's see if you can see how long it is. It starts here, and continues two or three pages. And it's not just that the Nesivah is always so panoramic, which he is, and he sees a broad scale. He's not just looking at one pasuk or one idea. He's connecting five or six ideas at once, and sometimes five or six words of pesukim. It's incredible to see his mind working. Very, very, very rare. But he also spent a lot of time and thought as to how Torah was taught and unfolded. It's not frequent that you have people that are part of a process and can step out of the process and question how the process unfolded. So, for example, we have the Rambam, he's a Gemara of the Perush Mishnah. How was Torah taught? You have the Shura Gaon in his letter, the Geres Shura Gaon. How was Torah taught? But because you learned Torah in your generation, but in each generation, Torah was taught differently. So I can tell you how Rav Lichtenstein taught me Torah, but I can promise you the Ramban taught his Talmidim Torah very differently. So for me to be able to explain to you the unfolding of the Masorah, not just names and this one and that one, and what changed, and how did the historiographical changes impact, and you don't have to have a panoramic mind. It's interesting to see people that are able to capture that sweep. He does. And he does in the beginning of Devarim. He does even more so in a very fascinating introduction to the Shulchus. He has this huge introduction to the Shulchus called Kidmas Emek, because his parish to the Shulchus is called Hemek She'ela. It's the depth of the She'ela, Hemek Davar, this is parish to the Torah, but Hemek She'ela. And to a degree, the Nesiv really repopularized the Shulchus. I don't know how many people even knew of the Shulchus, or you heard of the Shulchus, but really learned Shulchus until the Nesiv basically recycled the Shulchus. Running this incredible parish called Hemek She'ela. What's interesting is that the Shultz was written as a Parshas HaShavuos, Parshas HaShavuos Shirim, even as all halacha. It was like one of the first attempts to deceive people into learning halacha. They want to learn halacha, this is called halacha, but if you're learning a parsha, okay, so let's have a parsha. And everyone showed up and he gave them halachas on the parsha. And then it's Siv in the Velazhin gave a shir every morning for 20-30 minutes after davening on Parshas Shavua, which then became the Hemek Davar, which to you and I would seem like obvious. Of course, every yeshiva and every high school has a Parsha shir, but for hundreds of years, people just didn't learn Parsha, and people did on their own, but it wasn't part of the, I can't really call it curriculum, but it wasn't part of the Seder. So anyway, so he talks about what's really happening in Arvos Moav. This is the third stage of Torah's transmission, because the Torah was given in Har Sinai. It was clearly taught by Moshe Rabbeinu in Ohel Moed, and now it's in Arvos Moav. And he has several midrashim in which there is this tripart division: Sinai, Ohel Moed, Arvos Moav. So the simple one, it was Mishnah Torah. Moshe is just reviewing it, giving it a human voice, a human slant. Of course, Moshe Baruch was telling him what to write, but telling him to write it as if he's writing it from a human perspective. And that's how many Rishonim take it, even to the point that they don't count mitzvos in Dvarim as new mitzvos. They're just complements or fillers or extensions of mitzvos, because this is a review section. It's a review section. Even if it's a new mitzvah, conceivably it should be seen as an extension of a previous mitzvah. The Nesiv has as a thesis. No other way to say it. Thesis, because it covers, it's in the introduction. It's in the beginning of Parshas Devarim. It filters throughout the entire Sefer. That basically Moshe received the Torah at Har Sinai, gave the Torah to Amisul at Har Sinai. Then in Ramah, he taught them the Torah of the Pesukim. He taught them all the halachas that those Pesukim led to. You can't teach Torah without tracing them to halachas, and not just halachas, but what they mean. The basic meaning is. But he held off on Torah Shabbat Peh until Arvos Moav. Now, whether he held off on Torah Shabbat Peh and Arvos Moav because he wasn't sure whether he even wanted to share it as one day, and the Gemara said it, and the Nedarim suggested Hashem gave it to Moshe, you make a decision whether you want to share it, or for whatever reason they just weren't ready for it. That's a second layer of conversation that he gets to. But at this point, he's teaching them Torah Shabbat Peh, and not Torah Shabbat Peh direct concepts, because that he taught them in Omoi, but the logic and the methodology and the tools, what we would call lambdas. And he splits them into two: tools and logic. Because tools are your gemara. It's like, what tools do you use? Logic is, okay, now that you have the tools, now get beneath the system and it's in the inner logic. Sometimes Shas doesn't need a tool. You don't need a halacha. You just need a svara. You buy same a car, you buy same a svara. You're able to put two ideas together in Shas, or many ideas, and there was the inherent logic in Shas. And that's what he taught them in Arvos Moav. And that's why if you look in the pasuk in the beginning of Devarim, you have this very long pasuk. V'achad l'chodesh diber Moshe al b'nei Yisrael k'chol asher tzivah Hashem asa aleihem. What is diber Moshe? We know this is all implicit that whatever Hashem taught Moshe, He teaches Am Yisrael. Diber Moshe al b'nei Yisrael k'chol asher tzivah Hashem asa aleihem. This is Moshe's decision now, whether he chooses to actually share it with them or he chooses that now is the time to share it with them. But either way, he's delivering, and you could feel the Nitziv saying this in Velashim, and this is the height and the clot, you know, one of the greatest golden eras of Lamdus in all of Jewish history, where people just discovering not a new idea but new language to capture old ideas, and Reb Chaim, and just you can feel this is a period piece in which he's describing what's happening in Arvus Mav, what's happening in Velashim, that they receive the Psukim, and they receive the base knowledge of Torah, we call the Pkias of Kshas. And now, let's get into the methodology, let's get into the logic, let's get into he'll call the Pepula Shatara. Again, it's it, it's a little different than Reb Chaim, but we talk about the stylistic differences of how they learned it. And the second part, this is just such a long and encompassing, is that in Arvus Moav, Moshe already, he doesn't just realize, but he's willing to share with Am Yisrael that even though 40 years has expired, and you're about to enter Eretz Yisrael, you're going to go to Galus at some point. Galus has now become part of the mix, part of the national narrative. Had you entered after 11 days, Achadasiyam Mecharev, the beginning, maybe it would have been utopia, maybe it would have been a quick end to history. Am Yisrael would have stayed in their land, affected the going that way. But it's clear now that you're going to go into Galus. When you go into Galus, you need Torah Shabbatah. You need to give you Torah Shabbatah. You need to give the logic and the methodology and the inner workings. And why you need it, he says, it sounds like he has different voices. One voice sounds like existentially. In order to have the strength of character and the faith and the commitment to Torah, you need to be part of the process. A lot of times people who don't encourage younger people to learn Lamdas, right? You know, I'm sure you met a lot of people in YU and a lot of conversations. A lot of Rav Schachter, Tommy and I would always have this conversation. Like you're 18, you're 19, you're 20 years old. When you just read through what people have written that are better than you and greater than you and bigger than you, if at all, or at least that was where Archer does this. And part of the answer to that question is that when you're reading ideas that other people have developed, as much as you submit to those ideas, it's harder to personalize and internalize it. When you actually are part of the nuts and bolts, you are internalizing yourself, becomes very deep and very existential and very personal and very, very formative if it translates into that spiritual moment. And in the Tziv's drama, that will give you the strength and commitment to Torah during Galus, where you face so much pressure. With something absorbed from other people and something secondary, and this one says, that one says, this one says, that one says. But there's something about creativity. If it's not egotistical and it's not self-serving, but that you're a creator and that you own it and that it's something that's deeply lodged in your subconscious. So that's some, I mean, I'm speaking my modern language, but some of the language is used. And the other part that he uses is that you don't have, sometimes when you have the Beis HaMikdash, he talks about sometimes you go to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Urim V'Tumim, to the Kohen, without differentiating who you'd go to. But sometimes the answer would be, this is the answer without thinking. Blind acceptance. This is the Urim V'Tumim. This is what the Sanhedrin says. This is what the Kohen says. And the answer didn't have to be, as we say, worked out through logic and computation. It was just, this is the answer to the sugya. This is the answer to the Tosus. Obviously, there's no Tosus. You won't have that Makom anymore because you'll be in Galus. So you're on your own. And when you're on your own, you have to fall back upon logic. It's a nice, feel this as a metaphor. When I'm learning a sugya, there's a certain excitement I feel in a sugya when I'm on my own. When you're going to Sugya and there's tons of Rishonim and tons of Achronim, you know, I don't know, Tfilos Keneged Avos Tiknum, Karbonis Tiknum, where's my voice, where's my place in the Sugya? I'm just, you know, reading, and it's a great experience. When you get to a Sugya, Tum of Atara in the middle of Sukkah, Rishonim didn't comment on it, and here or there people have a comment here or there. And you apply all those skills and tools that you've applied, that you've learned and you've built from Sugyas we have Rishonim and Achronim, and you take those skills and now I can learn this Gemara and Geshmak away and make heads and tails out of it. And so you feel as if, okay, I don't have the support for whatever reason. People didn't write about it, they give shir about it, they thought it was assumed, whatever, but here, able to fill in the blanks. So just a fascinating, it's if it gets you thinking. and I'm sure you know, but you know, to me, one of the sad parts is today people aren't learning as much lumbas as they should. There's a recession of lumbas for all sorts of reasons, and they're all good reasons, and happy people are learning other things. But it's a hard place to be in when you realize the depth and the beauty of that world, and Bhakti Chandra realizes it also. And sometimes it's not something that makes its way necessarily as much into the base manage as it used to. That's my feeling. Right? That's true. Rishira, you're in Hawaii now?
Yes, sir.
Right, so you're...